This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. Boom, and we're back. I love doing this show. I love the opportunity to talk to really smart people about really big ideas. And every Saturday morning when I sit down and edit these, I get to replay that whole conversation. And it's just awesome to get to listen to these ideas and share them with you here. As I joined the sales community a few years ago, a lot of people welcomed me in. Everyone was warm and welcoming, but none more than Jill Conrath. She was one of those people. Jill took my calls. She answered any and every question that I asked her, and I asked her a lot of questions. She was extraordinarily generous with her time and with her ideas. I asked Jill to step into the arena to talk about sales, and she does that here. This is part one of our conversation. The second part of our conversation is on a second show, and there I asked Jill to talk about something much more personal. You'll have to come back if you want to hear that one. Here, Jill's going to share her ideas about what's changed in sales. She gives a wake-up call for sales leadership, talks about how social media is like a small town, and shares some of the results of her LinkedIn survey. So here is Jill Conrath in the arena. Hey, Jill, how are you?
I'm good today. How are you, Anthony?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm so happy to be here with you today to talk about this stuff.
Let's get right into sales. There have been all kinds of shifts in sales over the past couple decades. What do you believe have been the most relevant changes? And what do you think, I want you, if you can, to tie this to, what needs to change for salespeople in order to be successful? Because there's a group of people that have been selling for a long time who I believe haven't made that shift yet to what needs to change. And then there's some new people coming in, and they're certainly not getting the guidance on what they really need to do now to succeed, in my mind. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I see it all the time. And in terms of what do I see? I mean, to me, the biggest thing is salespeople in many cases are unnecessary for the standard rule and practice that they always had, which was being a deliverer of information. And the fact that everybody can go online and learn whatever they want and research any problems and check everything out online is, to me, the most profound change that's happened in our profession. And quite honestly, I see salespeople all over the place who literally think that their job is to tell about their stuff. And it is such the wrong approach today, and it is so eminently disgusting from a prospect's perspective that they get blown out as a salespeople. They just totally get blown out, and they struggle and struggle, and their bosses tell them, make more calls, tell them how good we are, let them know we have all these capabilities, and they're just, it's like a total disconnect between what's needed today versus what people are doing.
When do you think that shift really started occurring? Can you guess?
It's been growing and growing and growing. I mean, I first started seeing it happen in the early 2000s when it was first happening. I don't know if you saw it occurring at about that time. But it was like, you know, with email and the blockades that people were putting around themselves and the fact that they could now go online and do that research. But it's gotten so much more so in the last couple years.
I think that's one piece of it. And let me ask you what you think about the second piece. We had a decade that was bookended on both sides by deep, deep recessions. At this time, we've had the growth of Walmart and this very huge transactional business that drove a lot of people in business down on price. Everything came down. And I think that part of it's the fact that we now have access to information as buyers that we didn't have before. And part of it is we really need salespeople to bring insight. We really need salespeople to understand the business well enough to help us. And dropping off the pamphlet and the brochures is not the kind of help that we need as buyers anymore. Yeah. And I think that that's been exacerbated and maybe made even more relevant because of how difficult it is to do business now and how many business challenges were caused over this last decade.
I think, the recessions and stuff have certainly played a role in it, and the fact that people are have been they have just simply have too much work to do, and they need to keep out any interruptions. And as salespeople, if we continue the kind of behavior that most salespeople are doing, we are an interruption of that is of no value. And you mentioned the word insight, and I don't think enough organizations understand that salespeople can be of tremendous value, but not by being a purveyor of product or service information, but by understanding the business and the business value of making change, and by helping people make complex decisions that they're not used to making as well. And virtually in all the organizations that I work with, the training of the salespeople and what they're constantly giving them in order to stay up to date, there's really so little about here's our customer, here's the trends in their industry, here's the real challenges that they're facing, here's the complexity of the decision that they're making, and here's how we can help them move step by step through their decision, providing value at each step. And to me, it's a real crying shame that organizations in and of themselves are giving salespeople the wrong information in order to be successful today.
We're still training them like it's 2 decades or 3 decades ago.
Yes. Yes.
And
And it absolutely boomerangs against them and causes them to have sales failure. I mean, it is a failure issue.
I've been asked a couple times, how do you get them the business acumen and the situational knowledge? And whenever I answer that question, people don't like the answer because there's not a shortcut to getting it. And you've really got to do the work with the reps. You've got to send them out with more experienced people. You've got to let them rub up against real business problems. And we don't want to go to that much trouble or expense because it's difficult and expensive.
It takes a lot of time to bring somebody up to speed and to give them, the information and insight that they need to do. And quite frankly, companies are on such a run, run, run as fast as you can mentality that most of what they're doing, what I see, is a lot of knee-jerk reactions. Do this, no, try that, and go after them here. And nothing is a sustained developmental program that helps them really mature as individuals, not as salespeople, but as individuals who can have business conversations with seasoned people on the other side of the fence. And that's really what needs to be done. It needs to be slowed down because the more you push and try to make people go faster, the less productive, I mean, the less effective they become. They may be more, I don't know, not more productive, because if they're not getting anything done and not getting the right things done, they're not more productive. They may be making more calls and doing more proposals and seeing more people and all that, but they're not getting the results. And the push and the knee-jerk reactions simply cause people to do worse and fall further and further behind and get more discouraged too, by the way.
It's the shiny object syndrome. We
Yes.
this didn't work, so we try something new rather than buckling down and sticking with something long enough to help salespeople become
Oh, I
effective. We
know.
move from one to the next.
Right. And Anthony, too, let me just say, that you said earlier about sales managers not giving the right information. I mean, there's a huge number of people in sales leadership positions that have no conception of what they're telling their salespeople to do is actually wrong because they are still operating on that old paradigm. And yet, when you take a look at and talk with them and ask them to reflect on their own behavior, just simply as a buyer, in terms of what do they do when they go through their email messages? What do they do when they have a salesperson on the phone? What are they trying to do? There's a literal disconnect between what their own behavior is and yet what they're telling their salespeople to do. They will delete anybody who comes to them and does exactly what they tell their salespeople to do. And
Absolutely.
it's just like there's a huge wake-up call in the sales leadership ranks that needs to be rung so that the change happens.
We're all victims of our own success. We think because it worked, then that's what it
Yes.
is. And then time goes by and we don't change enough to be able to help other people with that.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Unless, something comes and shakes your bells and forces you out of your comfort zone and to learn and grow again.
Let's move on to social. And
Yeah.
let's talk about, you just published a new book on LinkedIn. I've had great success with LinkedIn, and I'm a fan mostly. Some of the format changes make it a little Facebooky for my taste. But talk if you can, talk about two things for me. One, how important do you believe social is for salespeople today? And I know you're going to say it's important, but I want to hear you talk about that. And
Yeah.
then I want to hear you talk about the biggest takeaway from your survey of 3,000 plus people in LinkedIn, and then we'll point people to that resource here during the podcast and on the show notes.
Yeah. You know, what I think that has to be said first is when I talk to people about social, I think there's a huge misunderstanding about what social media is and the impact of social selling. I mean, when I see people, they and talk with them about it, they go, you know, I just don't get this Twitter thing, you know, and you know, who cares what I had for lunch? And I'm just, you know, not really into that kind of stuff. And I don't want to be on Facebook with work. And what they don't understand is that social media is really just user-created content, and it's a way for them to be engaged with their customers in a way that's sharing of information, and it's also a way for them to learn a great deal about the people that they're calling on who have posted information about themselves online. And to me, if you can get people away from this social media, Facebooking, Twitter type of thing, and get them to think about, you know, social is more. It's simply about being able to share what you know and finding out about other people, and they can find out about you more online. So it's really more about being in a small town, in a sense, as I'm talking. It's really about, I have a chance to find out about all these people and know about them before I actually decide to connect with them. We do that, and our customers are also, our prospects are also doing that. So I really believe that social media is crucial. It's overlooked. It's feared from a lot of people. The young 20-somethings are embracing it because that's all they know. But you take a look at a lot of the people in their mid-30s on up, and they're kind of going, yeah, I'm not really sure if I should go there. But the truth is, anybody who is going there and embracing it and saying, I got to wrestle this beast to the ground, even if I don't understand it, I've got to figure it out because there's something going on here. I honestly think they will be truly amazed at what they can find out via social media that they didn't know about before, and the connections that they can make through it as well.
Before we get to LinkedIn, quick story. I was recording some content with Chris Brogan, who's huge in social. He needed new tires for his Camaro. He tweeted that he was going to need new tires for his Camaro and got a call from somebody in Boston an hour away from him, Nelson Tires, asking for his phone number so they could tell him what they knew about the tires that he needed. And I listen to that as somebody in sales, and I think about his view of buying is that the first thing I do is I go to the social web and ask a question, and then people with great insight tell me what they know about tires so I can make a decision.
Right.
What is that? I mean, he's supposed to, you know, drive to a store, right?
It's a huge town, but it's a small town. He just goes on to talk to the people that he knows, and who knows anything about tires. And I think what we don't realize is that, you know, people are doing that about copy machines, about printers, about consulting services or website developers. I mean, it's all happening out there that people are talking, and we can ignore it, or we can, like I said earlier, figure out what it is and wrestle this beast to the ground and learn it, even if we don't know it, because it's what's happening right now.
Let's go to LinkedIn. Tell me about your survey. What was the biggest takeaway from you from the LinkedIn survey? And tell me a little bit about how you came to that survey.
Let me just start by saying that over 3,000 people took the survey, and some were salespeople, some were consultants, some were entrepreneurs. So it kind of covered the gamut. They were from small companies, big companies, large companies. What was the major takeaway? Of the 3,000 people who took the survey, we uncovered 4.7% of them who really were behaving differently and getting superior results as compared to everybody else. We call these 4.7% the top sellers. And what they demonstrated and how we sorted them out is they, number one, said that they were getting lots of opportunities via LinkedIn. Lots. Not one, not two, not occasionally. They were getting lots of opportunities via LinkedIn. And the second qualification to put them in that category is they were really having a good year in sales. So you could get a lot of opportunities, but if you're selling something that's 99 cents, you may not have a good year in sales. So these are people that were really having a breakout year in business this year, and much of that business was coming via LinkedIn. And what we did is we benchmarked them against everybody else who took the survey. And we had no idea that, you know, that there would be this group. What we were looking for was, you know, some trends. And so we looked at the data a lot of ways, but what jumped out is this 4.7%. And then when we started comparing them to everybody else, it was like what they were doing was so fundamentally different from everybody else on LinkedIn that, it really was more than just they were using LinkedIn. They were, LinkedIn was an integral part of their strategic prospecting. And it was a strategic prospecting. The mindset of these people was so different than the average person. I mean, the bulk of people were using LinkedIn for research, but the kind of research and the depth of research and the commitment to LinkedIn as a tool was so substantially different. And I mean, I'll just give you some really quick things. When we asked people, how many of your customers were you connected to? The average person wasn't connected to very many of their customers. And yet the people who were the top sellers were connected to well over 50% of their customers. And they were doing this very strategically. Number one, by connecting to their customers, they got connected to a whole lot of other people in their customers' organizations. So they were ensuring that they weren't just dealing with one person. So again, see the strategic nature of it here. So they were connecting to multiple people that way within the organization. So they had multiple connections, but they were also then connected to that customer who liked them and loved them dearly. They were connected to all their connections. And they were wanting that because then they would search through their customer's connection to identify people that they wanted to connect with because it would make sense from a business perspective. And then they would very strategically talk to or connect with their customer and initiate a conversation and get a connection, as opposed to trying to dial the phone and call somebody and call somebody and call somebody and, you know, or email and get nothing. They were leveraging their connections as a very smart person, and they were doing that. You know, that's something that when most people are only connected to 10 or 20% of their customers, I mean, that's a huge difference just in one little thing.
And you get a view of the whole organization, and you also get a view. I think the easiest way to get a customer is a referral. And I've always said the people who hate cold calling also hate asking for referrals. And, you know, you've got these people who like you, and now you can see their connections, you know, and you can see that they've written about each other. You know, they've written each other testimonials. It's natural to go to that person after you've created some value and ask.
Right. And you go to their profile and again, take the look at the research. You know, a lot of people will go look at the profile and just look at it and go, okay. But the top sellers would look at the profile and they would scan the profile for anything that they could find that would might be a way to connect, not just a person, but a way to initiate a conversation, because they realized that it was important to have that connection with somebody, where it might be a school or university that they went to, or it might be the fact that they both worked at another company at the start of their career 20 years ago. You know, I mean, I look at it, and if somebody worked at Xerox, which is where I started my professional career, they're a Xeroid. You know, they're a Xeroid. And we have something in common. I look at people's profile, and I was a high school teacher before I moved into sales. And if anybody was a teacher, I have a different conversation and a different approach to them than I would if they were always in the sales field, because a teacher and I have a different connection. And so that's what we were seeing. What I was seeing, the top sellers were incredibly strategic about what they did. And just one more example. I mean, I could go on and on because it really was fascinating to me in this study. But the use of groups was fascinating to me, and how top sellers were so strategic in their use of groups. You know, first of all, they belong to a gazillion groups. I mean, LinkedIn allows you to belong to 50 maximum, while top sellers, you know, they were 30 or more groups, and they were strategic in their groups. They weren't just, you know, joining groups on how to sell because they were in salespeople. They were joining industry-specific groups. They were joining groups that certain level of decision makers would belong to. If they sold to the CFO, they were in multiple CFO groups, or they might be in multiple CFO groups and pharmaceutical groups because that's who they dealt with. But they were joining these groups, and they weren't just joining them. They were going to the person they wanted to connect with. You know, they'd see, well, I want to connect with John Smith. They'd scan John Smith's groups to see what groups he belonged to. They would join the groups that he belonged to. They would track what he was doing, and they would follow John Smith and do a follow, which is different from a connection, but it gives you all the data that John Smith posts and the updates that John Smith does. They might notice that John Smith commented on something, and then they would comment on John Smith's comment, or if John Smith posed a question. So they were really looking at John Smith and saying, how am I going to connect with this guy? And they were watching and observing his behavior and looking for ways to initiate conversations. And they were also, you know, using that as a way to move the conversation offline. And so initial connection might be online, just kind of a little chit chat and back and forth, but then they were going offline fairly quickly. And so it was fascinating, the strategic nature of the engagement. It wasn't happenstance. It was deliberate. It was provocative. It was, you know, full force after John Smith.
And they're getting a lot of insight by watching, right? They're in this community where they're talking about what's important to them.
Right. And so they know what John Smith is. Maybe he's raised a question. Maybe he's shared his point of view on something. They have some perspective about how John Smith thinks.
And where do people go to get the LinkedIn ebook?
The LinkedIn ebook is on my website, jillconrath.com. And it's kind of like everywhere on my
okay.
website.
We can find it right now. I'll put show notes up too.
It's on the front page, and it's also under sales resources. I have a free sales resources section. It's the top of the sales resource. The hard thing is, though, Anthony, people are going to spell my last name wrong.
We'll take care of that. We'll
you
take care of that on the site.
CK.
You have been extraordinarily successful as a salesperson. You've been extraordinarily successful as a business person. You've been extraordinarily successful as an author and a speaker and somebody who leads workshops and consults and helps sales organizations. It's my last question for you, but it's a big one. What do you think the critical attributes are that you've possessed that have allowed you to succeed? What do you think that you're made up of that really has allowed you to succeed in an industry that's tough? And all the industries you've been in have been tough.
That's a good question. And I think I have the ability to reframe things that other people don't necessarily have. But yet I see it as a characteristic that virtually all top salespeople are doing. I don't choose to fail. And so I don't like to fail. And I am a miserable failure. And so rather than feeling bad about myself, I kept saying to myself, Jill, you haven't failed. You just haven't figured it out yet. And so I reframed every bad experience I ever had because I couldn't handle it as a bad experience. I just reframed it as a learning experience. And I haven't figured it out yet. Okay, that didn't work. What else can I do? And so by keeping things as a learning experience, it became less personal and it became doable. I just hadn't found out yet. And that's a big, you know, it's not that I can't. And then I also would look at other people and go, well, if Anthony can do it, I could certainly do it. Because Anthony's no wizard. You know, I mean, he's like a normal human being too. And so I was able to look at other people and see them as normal human beings. And if they could figure it out, I could figure it out too. I just didn't know how yet.
What about competitiveness? I see you as a competitive person. I see you as somebody who is really, you strive to be a leader in your space, and you are, and it feels like it's built in.
I have always wanted to be good at what I do. I don't necessarily have to beat other people.
I'm not saying beat other people, but competitive in that you're going to play at the highest level.
I'm going to do the best I can. The best I can. And I'm constantly challenging myself to do the next thing. So my competitiveness is more to try to take it to the next level, whatever it is.
It's inner driven. It's being a better version of Jill tomorrow than you were today.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I'm not sure if it always gets better. deeper and richer and, you know, as I learn more, and sometimes it's painful, but ultimately I guess it's better.
Wasn't that awesome? That's part one with Jill Conrath. You can find her at jillconrath.com, and that's Conrath with a K. You can find me at thesalesblog.com, and when you get there, do sign up for the newsletter. That is the best content that I produce each week, bar none. And I want you to be there. That does it for this week. I'll see you next week in the arena.